The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Thanks, Lachlan. Well, I'm going to begin with a picture, and this is a picture of my two children. On your right is Annabelle, who's 7 years old, and my son, Mitchell, who is 4 years old. And if you look at this picture of them, you'll be able to see that they have similar eyes. You'll be able to see that they have similar smiles. But when it comes to colouring in, they're completely different. They're worlds apart. My daughter, when she colours in, it looks like this. Everything is within the lines. She's neat, she's tidy. And she freaks out when a single stroke goes outside the line. She scrunches up the piece of paper. It's a disaster, and throws it in the bin. Is it? We need to restart now. But my son, well, his drawings look like this. Lines are optional extras for him. He doesn't care where he colours, he doesn't care what he colours, and sometimes he doesn't care who he colours as well. You see, one is meticulous, the other is carefree. One is focused, the other is creative. One is thorough, the other just goes with the flow. Which one are you like? Which one are your colleagues like? And how do we bring out the best in each person? Because often the way to get better for one is to become like the other. So for my daughter, often the advice would be, hey, Annabelle, you know what? Just relax a little bit. It's okay if it goes outside the lines. Just be a little bit more carefree. Or for my son, you know what? Hey, Mitchell, I'm glad you're enthusiastic, but let's channel that enthusiasm to be inside the lines. See, often the way to get better for one is to become like the other. Often the way to get better for one is to become something they're not. And the question is there another way to bring the best out of someone? Well, welcome to Bible Shots. And as Lachlan introduced me, my name's Mark Leong and I work here full-time at City Bible Forum. And today we're beginning a three-talk series titled Unlocked, Maximising Your Potential. And in this series, we get to see, is there another way to draw out the best in someone other than asking them to become something they're not? And during this series, we're going to unlock three different personality types. The perfectionist, that's this week. Next week, the divergent. And our last in our series will be the battler. Because if we can unlock these three personalities, then you and I can leave not only understanding ourselves better, but how to be better. Better friends, better colleagues. How we can bring the best out of somebody else. Alternatively, if we don't unlock who we are, I suspect we might be quite frustrated. Others might frustrate us, and we might frustrate them. And I think we'll live with this, the best way I can describe it is a lurking unease that life could have been better. And from the outset, can I suggest that to unlock these personalities, the key is knowing Jesus. So let's start off with the first personality, unlocking the perfectionist. And today's talk will be divided into three parts. The first part, I'm going to define the perfectionist. The middle part, we're going to understand the perfectionist. What are the advantages and disadvantages? And the final part, what difference does Jesus make if you are a perfectionist? How does he unlock this personality? Does he ask a perfectionist to stop being perfect, you know, to be a little bit more carefree, to do something they're not, or does he provide a different way? So let's go to the first part of the talk. What is a perfectionist? And let me define it for you. As part of my research, I looked at a psychological journal, and this is the definition. A perfectionist is a person who strives for flawlessness, setting excessively high performance standards, and is overly critical in self-evaluations and overly concerned regarding others' evaluations. Now, that's a mouthful. Let me break it down for you with three markers, all beginning with the letter S. A perfectionist has a certain standard, and that is flawlessness. It's perfect. A perfectionist is also self-critical. They judge and rate their own performance. And finally, a perfectionist is sensitive. They're influenced by what others think of them. They have a standard, they're self-critical, and they're sensitive. Or to break it down and make it more concrete, when you were a kid, did your colouring look like this? Or did it look like this? See, are you a perfectionist? Do you work with people who are perfectionists? That's the first part I've defined it. Now let's go to the middle part of the talk and let's understand a perfectionist. What are the advantages and disadvantages of having that standard which is high, of being self-critical and being sensitive? Now, for those of you who don't know me, I'm an ABC. That means I'm an Australian-born Chinese, which means I'm a mix of two worlds. On the one part, I back for the Swans. That's my Australian side. And if you follow AFL, you would feel sorry for me because we're doing very bad this season. I also eat meat pies with tomato sauce, but I've also used an umbrella as a sunshade. That's the Asian part of me. See, I'm a mix of East and West, Australian and Asian. And have you noticed that when you go to eat at a Western or an Eastern, an Asian restaurant, have you noticed the difference? Because when you go to an Asian restaurant, it's all about volume and quantity. It's all about how many people can you get through the door. Just for example, look at Yum Cha on a Saturday. What is it like? Yum Cha is effectively the Asian Uber, but in a restaurant. That's how it works. Why? Because you have meals on wheels. Literally, they roll around food to you, and they yell out your order at you. They're saying, Char Siu, Siu Mai, you've got to eat this. They're forcing you to order. Not only that, sometimes if there's a queue so long, they'll bring you in and they make the table in front of you because they're so short on time. And the final thing to prove the point is, have you noticed when you go to Yum Cha, they have this secret billing system. It's this card. No one knows how much it costs, but the whole idea is they just stamp, stamp, stamp anywhere, and then you take the card away from your table. And then you join a long queue at the counter. Why? Because they want the table. We want someone else to go through very quickly. See, when you go to an Asian restaurant, it's all about quantity, churn, flow through. Let's get more people through the door. But have you noticed the difference when you eat at a Western restaurant? It's all about quality. It's all about the ambiance, the lighting, the background music, the view. The tables are preset, their napkins nicely pressed, and you peruse a menu and you choose at your own time. No one's yelling food orders at you. You have the time to experience the quality of dining. See, it's all about quality and not quantity. And that is a feature of being a perfectionist. There is quality in everything you do. There's a standard, and it's a high quality. And that leads to two advantages. The first advantage is that if you're a perfectionist, you are rigorous and thorough. No stone is left unturned for a perfectionist. You're committed to that quality, that high standard. And the second advantage is that because high standards don't happen without dedication, you are self-motivated. You're committed, you're focused, and you're self-driven. And you can tell that by the photos you take. Here's a photo, a tourist picture of the Louvre. Now, I've never been there, maybe some of you have, but if I were to go there, I can imagine I take a picture like this. You know, my wife and I will be there saying, oh, we've finally made it. Quick, take a snapshot of me. I just want to, so it's for a memory and we'll remember we've been there. But a perfectionist picture would look like this. Just look at it. Have you noticed the lighting? Have you noticed the positioning, the proportions, the use of the prop? When you see something executed at a high standard, it takes your breath away. That's wow. That's beautiful. See, there are advantages of being a perfectionist, but there are disadvantages as well. Here is a glass, and for some, this is 9/10 full, but a perfectionist sees the 1/10 that's missing because it's not perfect. See, perfectionists only celebrate the perfect, so they see how short they are rather than how far they've come. They see how short they are rather than how far they've come. And so rather being thankful for all the small steps, they're only thankful when perfection is achieved. And so one of the disadvantages is perfectionists have thin thankfulness. The glass is 1/10 empty. And secondly, rest is evasive for them. See, perfectionists are never satisfied because there's always a 1/10 missing. But on top of that, they're sensitive to what others think. They're self-critical and sensitive, and those two are a dangerous combination. Because every achievement is soured because it could have been a little bit better. It could have come a little bit sooner. It could have been acknowledged a little bit wider. I could have been thanked a little bit more. For a perfectionist, rest is tantalizingly close, but never experienced in full, because something could have been better. Someone could have been pleased more. Being a perfectionist really is a mixed bag. There are useful parts, there are nuts and bolts which can go together, but there are also sharp bits. There's some nails, there's some leftover washes which are thinking, why? So is there a way to fit all these pieces together? So we've defined a perfectionist, now we've understood a perfectionist, seeing the advantages and disadvantages. Let's go to the final part of the talk and see what difference does Jesus bring to this mixed bag. How does he deal with it? Does he say to the perfectionist, lower your standards, relax a little, just be a bit more carefree? Does he ask the perfectionist to become something they're not? Or does he provide a different way? Does he unlock the perfectionist? And to do this, we're going to see how Jesus changed a perfectionist. So let's go to the final part of the talk. And let's look at the story of a person. His name is Paul. He lived in the first century in the Middle East. And he was one of the early followers of Jesus. And he begins summarizing his life like this. And the first point we see is that this guy, Paul, is a perfectionist. Here it is. If anyone else thinks he has reason to put confidence in the flesh, I have more. Circumcised on the eighth day of the people of Israel, the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, in regard to the law, a Pharisee, as for zeal, persecuting the church, as for legalistic righteousness, faultless. Now, as you look at that, and as you read that with me, there are some unique cultural expressions, but the first century perfectionists is the same as the 21st century perfectionist. Because here is a worker who made sure there was quality in everything he did. Look at his actions. When it came to his legalistic righteousness, he was faultless. That's a perfectionist standard. And when it came to his job, he was, in regard to law, a Pharisee. A Pharisee was a religious teacher, leader back then. And Pharisees had a reputation for maintaining the highest standard and satisfying the strictest, most stringent moral code possible. So whenever it came to a law, he was fully compliant. Paul monitored himself and said, I passed, and I passed with flying colours. Now, if that was the full story, you can't help but think that this guy, Paul, would be a bit arrogant, would be self-righteous, and because we're amongst friends here, he'd be a jerk to work with, wouldn't he? An absolute jerk. Because he'd nitpick. He'd point out every fault. After all, Paul was faultless. Why couldn't anyone else be? But the story continues because Paul's story runs into the story of Jesus. So what happens when Paul's story, a perfectionist, he's confronted with the teachings, the claims, and the death and resurrection of Jesus at that very first Easter? What happens when these two stories collide? Well, this is what happens. This is what Paul says. But whatever was to my profit, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ. What is more, I consider everything a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whose sake I have lost all things. Wow. What happened to Paul? The perfectionist Paul considered his version of being a perfectionist as bankrupt, a loss. Whatever was to my profit, I now consider loss. These are stark terms. That's very much a perfectionist language. You're either perfect or nothing. It's either profit or loss. And Paul saw the way he was living as a perfectionist as a loss. But how did Jesus unlock this perfectionist? And the clue can be found in the following sentence. What is more, I consider everything a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus. Paul the perfectionist found something even greater. Something even greater, not less perfect, but even more perfect. When Paul's story and Jesus' story collide, Jesus didn't tell Paul to relax, lower your standards. No, Jesus opened a greater form of perfectionism than the one Paul started with. Because when Paul heard and understood who Jesus was and what he did at that first Easter, Paul realized that Jesus understood him. I know, Paul, how rest is evasive for you. I know how you always are feeling that there's one-tenth missing. But Jesus not only understood him, but Jesus met him as a perfectionist. Paul, I know you're craving perfection. I'm not going to tell you to aim for anything less. But what I am going to tell you is this life, this perfectionist life, will grind you down. Because you will never be perfect. Your circumstances change, people change, you change. There's only one way to be perfect, and that's if someone who is perfect gives you that status. And at the very first Easter, when I died on the cross, that is what I did. I was perfect, and I gave you that status. So, you can now rest because I see you as perfect. You don't need to be sensitive because I see you as complete. Now you can stop and see the fullness of life. You can see how much you've come, the 9/10. You can see how much you can be thankful for because I give you my perfection. So now, go. Run hard. Press on. Be hardworking, be rigorous, but now without being sensitive, because I have secured your perfection. And that is what Paul did after he met Jesus. But I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. Brothers, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining towards what is ahead, I press on toward the goal. Jesus gave Paul the security to be a perfectionist in the right way, the proper way, the healthy way, by curtailing the disadvantages and magnifying the strengths. Jesus unleashed the perfectionist potential in Paul. Being a perfectionist without Jesus is a mixed bag, but being a perfectionist with Jesus is life without the baggage. It's life to the full.
This is Brené Brown, and she's a TED speaker, and she spent the last decade researching perfectionist and perfectionism in her book on the topic. And this is a quote from her book. "Perfectionism never happens in a vacuum. It touches everyone around us. We pass it down to our children. We infect our workplaces with impossible expectations, and it's suffocating for our friends and families. Being a perfectionist is a mixed bag. It harms us and spills over to harm others around us. But knowing Jesus changes this. Jesus shows us a new way. Rather than asking a perfectionist to become something they're not, Jesus unlocks their potential by reducing and removing the disadvantages and maximizing the strengths, freeing a perfectionist from the disadvantages and drawing out the best." In fact, Brené Brown gives a little teaser of this in the rest of the quote, which is this: "Thankfully, compassion also spreads quickly. When we're kind to ourselves, we create a reservoir of compassion that we can extend to others." How can a perfectionist be compassionate to themselves if they always see the one-tenth that's missing? How can they find rest and satisfaction? How can they be thankful? Well, Paul found both in Jesus. He could be a perfectionist and have life to the full. He could be compassionate to himself once he had met Jesus, so he could extend compassion to others. See, Jesus unlocks the perfectionist. Will you see if he can unlock you today? Thanks.
We'll get Mark back up here to start doing our Q&A time.
Yes.
And so while you maybe put some words to your questions, Mark, you seem to have a bit of familiarity with the perfectionist thing. Is it just that you researched it really thoroughly, or do you have a bit more skin in the game?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a bit dangerous because Lachlan and I work together, so maybe I should be asking, am I a good person to work with or not? But yes, I think I'm a perfectionist because of, prepared for this talk, I think I've realised I'm a perfectionist for two reasons. One is I'm from a migrant family. So when you come to a new country and you don't have a lot of networks, there's a very strong work ethic that was kind of ingrained in me, and that made me think, oh, you need to work hard and have a high standard. That's one. But also I think my Asian cultural heritage is my culture celebrates or elevates those that high standard. And a good example is I'm ABC. There's a funny joke within ABC circles, which is we're called ABC, and we're not BBC because we don't accept Bs. We only ever accept As. You need to get an A to be an Asian and you must perform very well. And it's like, oh, that's, you know, is that true? I thought it's just a joke. And then a book like Tiger Parenting comes out from our culture. And oh, actually, there are some values that drive our culture. And one of them is excellence. We celebrate that. And so you need to be a perfectionist. What I've over time, as I've wrestled with that in myself, I've realised that actually there's a high degree of insecurity being that way and working like that. You never ever think you're enough. And I thought that was just me as a kid, but now at City Bible Forum I meet CEOs to graduates all along the spectrum, men and women. I have lunch and coffees with them and hear their stories, and I realise that's just not a high school thing. That's actually something which workers experience. Many workers do. They just think, they're quite insecure. Have I done enough? Am I going to be okay? And in a group this size, it would not surprise me that that's you as well. And so that's where I think Jesus does speak a different word than just try and make sure you can make up that one-tenth.
Thanks. Well, over to you guys. What questions or comments do you have for Mark based on what he's had to say?
Where Paul talks about becoming content in all circumstances, it sounds like maybe he's been cured of perfectionism, did
it? Yeah. I think he's been cured from that evasive rest side of it. So that's the thing. I guess for the poor talk, there are some good things that ought to be celebrated about being perfectionist. It's like that beautiful picture. If you weren't a perfectionist, you wouldn't have thought or tried to position everything. And when you see something that's done well, We all marvel at it. Go, wow. And that's the right response. So you want to see, as a perfectionist, if that is you, there's a lot you can offer, and that's great, but there's also a big downside, which will destroy you. And what Jesus does is he enters, if you know him, trust him, if you see what he did at that first Easter, you'll see he deals with this downside, which means, like Paul, you then can go even harder. You can do even more great things. And I think that's a really powerful transformative word. So that Paul can say, hey, I am content, because I know Jesus. I can rest. But his rest didn't translate to laziness. If anything, his rest meant, I'm going to go even harder. I'm going to even work. I'm going to press on for that goal. And I think it's the best of both worlds, which is a great. Is that possible? With Jesus, I think, yes.
Do you think also the part of that is if you think it's all about you and it's your plan, so things aren't going your way, it's very easy to get frustrated. But if you humble yourself to realise that you are a small part of someone else's big plan, I guess it's a lot easier to be content.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. If I were to do a talk on contentment, that would be another element, which is if you feel you need to, if you need to secure rest in your life, I think that's going to be a very frustrating pursuit, because there are things that are outside of your control which will thwart or circumvent your attempts to find rest. So in the same way that the only way to be a perfectionist is if perfection is given to you, I think if you're searching for rest in life, the only way is if it's actually given to you. And what does that look like? Well, I'm going to suggest again that meeting Jesus in the pages of the Bible is going to be the way to do that. And that's really exciting, because if you have it and experience it, life looks different. And that's what it means to follow Jesus.
One very quick one. Is Jesus necessary to deal with perfectionism? There's lots of ways to potentially deal with him. Why Jesus?
Yeah, why Jesus? Because that's a great question. I think there are a lot of techniques to curb, like to minimise the downside, those evasive risks, the thin thankfulness. But I don't think there's any way to remove it. And I think that's what Jesus does, only because Jesus says, I am perfect, and I'll give that status to you. The techniques kind of try and shrink it, but no one will say, I'm going to take it and I'm going to give it. So I think that's the unique proposition, to use business language, that Jesus brings to the table. Whether he can back it up, is he credible? You need to meet him in the pages of the Bible. But in my personal experience, the answer is definitely.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.